Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guy. It's going to be a great day to get some stuff done in and around your house. Beautiful weather. And Tony is back from his super secret assignment. Welcome back, Tony.
Thank you, Ernie.
How was it?
It was awesome.
Yeah?
Nice little getaway. My wife and I went up to New York with a couple of friends.
Mm.
I love the Big Apple.
Do you?
I really do.
Nice.
I could live there for just a year, take it all in, and then move on back. it wasn't, you know, typically you think of a little mini vacation, like something you want to relax.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly couldn't relax in a way that, you know, it's heavily populated and you're dodging a lot of people, but it's fun.
Yeah.
It really is. A lot of great food. And spent some time in Central Park, which we didn't really do much of the last time we were there last year.
Right.
And a beautiful park, by the way. I love parks. And we went to several different parks, as a matter of fact, and a couple outdoor markets and so forth. I'll try and get some pictures up on Facebook of those markets. They were really cool. A lot of fresh vegetables and stuff like that, and a lot of plants that people were selling. One, as a matter of fact, at Union Square Market, I saw one of the vendors. They had numerous flower blooms that were edible to put on your dishes. So that was pretty cool. And the most interesting part of the trip was Ellis Island.
Ellis Island?
Yes. A lot of history there. That was really interesting. But thanks for asking, by the way.
Sure.
How have you been? You're a little down in the back, I understand.
Yeah, that one of those things that seems to surface every couple of years. Overdid it. Had a long weekend. Did more things that I probably shouldn't have been doing, lifting and moving. And and as my doctor said when I finally got in to see him, well, this seems to keep coming back around. You need to maybe change your thought process. And it says here, you're 62, but I can tell by your injuries, you think you're 30. You know, yeah, it's a really good point. He goes, yeah, I seem to keep making this every couple of years. So, yeah, some disc issues back there, and just have to start thinking more and grunting less.
Sure, you big dummy.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to do that.
No.
Always, hey, work smarter, not harder.
Right.
That's what you're supposed to do.
I made one of those, tried to play a little humor to that, or apply a little humor to that by saying, you know, Lisa's looking for a software that will insert her voice into my hearing aids that will remind me that don't pick that up. Don't think you can lift that. Get the younger guys to do it.
You might be onto something.
Is it worth going back to the ER? You want to spend another week lying on your back on the floor with a heating pad?
Mm.
I'm like, okay, I think I'm starting to get the point. You only have to hit me.
Do they make one large enough for you to lie on?
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Or you get six of them.
All right.
Plug them all into like a power strip.
A big pan.
All right. I'm kidding. Well, I'm glad you're on the mends.
Yes.
So you just need to take it a little easier.
Be a little smarter.
That's right.
And, you know, my pappy always jokes around and would say, strong like bull. I have to quit thinking like a bull.
Is that your Indian name?
No, my Indian name is Standing Warhorse.
Standing Warhorse.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, I like that when you talk like strong like bull. Standing Warhorse.
Yeah.
I told you my Indian name.
No.
Yes, I did. It's a couple weeks ago.
Yeah?
Yeah, Tina pinned it on me.
What was that?
Itchy back. Remember?
Itchy back.
So I'm glad you're doing well.
Yeah.
I know that I saw a couple posts on Facebook, and I think the last time you were down in the back was during that firewood,
mm-hmm.
right before you hit that big firewood
that's
party.
That's exactly right.
Was it 2 years ago?
It was.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's why when he pulled that up, he goes, I just want to re-inform you here. You know, it's 2017, last time this happened. You thought you could split a mountain of firewood. That was 2015, and prior to that, 2013, you were back in here for the same issues.
Hmm.
But now, instead of three herniated discs, I have five.
How many discs do you have in the back?
I don't know, but apparently all of them are old and fragile.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if you can just go to the shelf and pull out a couple discs, like a like music disc, and just put it back into your back? It wouldn't be a bad gig, would it? All right. Yeah. So, you know, not just for you, that's everybody as far as that goes. Whenever you're outside and you're doing strenuous things or work smarter, lift things properly. And I know that's easier said than done, but nothing worse than when you're down in the back.
Ooh, boy. You are not wrong there.
Yeah. So, hey, it's going to get hot, hot, hot. I like what we started out with this morning.
It's been beautiful. I really can't complain at all, and no one should. The weather's been gorgeous for the last several days, and we're going to see some of that today, too. We do have some clouds drifting in and a slight chance, 20% of a pop-up shower. But tomorrow's going to be one of the first of three 90-plus days.
Oh, wow.
Sunny 92, sunny 92 on Monday, and then 90, 92 on Tuesday. So we were talking about how the heat will eventually surface and a lot of sunshine show up, and it is going to happen.
Mm. By chance, is the humidity coming along with those higher temperatures?
Oh, certainly. Ooh. Yeah. And, you know, so do be cautious when you're out there working. Stay hydrated, but now is the good time to get to your independently owned local garden center and pick up everything you need and get out in the yard, because there's still plenty of time to plant.
Oh, definitely. You know, a lot of people, just since I've been back this past week, we've been steady. We've been really busy. A lot of people have come in, and they've even stated, I'm still behind. I haven't finished things up.
Mm-hmm.
And no worries, because a lot of us, you know, that have garden centers and nurseries here locally in the tri-state area, we still have a lot of beautiful plant material on hand. It's not old. It's not tired plant material. It's good plant material. You may, in fact, find where some things are a little on the short supply side, but nonetheless, there's still a lot of stuff to choose from and select and make it beautiful.
Boy, Lisa has been tearing it up. A lot of time in the flower beds, rearranging, getting some mulch down, raking out old mulch and getting rid of that. I have to be honest with you, she paid close attention to what you said about you can't leave that stuff in there forever. You know, if it's been down for a long time, you need to freshen up things. So all of it was raked out, and she's got that weed suppressant down and then new fresh mulch.
Oh, there's a lot of things we're going to cover today. Mm-hmm. And also hang in there with us, because, you know, since the weather's going to turn to the warm side, we need to talk a little bit about watering. Some things you might want to consider doing as we progress throughout the summer months for your lawn and your landscape and your hanging baskets. Watering at this time of year is crucial and important. And there's some things you need to know, that's for sure. And also our friends from Arlinghouse Heating and Air.
Oh, great.
They'll be joining us around the 8 o'clock hour. It's getting hot. Yeah, you may want to check out that air conditioning unit.
We'll talk about it when we come back. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Welcome back. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we do want to take a second and thank our friend Bob from Bard's Nursery, who was in for Tony last week. And that music from Robin Trower made me think about that every time we would come back from the break. He was moving and grooving in your seat.
Bobby was over here.
Yeah.
Is that what happened to this chair?
That's what happened to it.
I wondered why it was a little lopsided.
Wanted to give him a shout out and a thank you for subbing. He does a great job when either one of us are away.
That he does. Pleasure. He was just by our place last night. He dropped off a couple things for me, some butterfly wheat, which we'll talk about too, because I posted that on our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
The Asclepias tuberosa, the perennial plant of 2017. And on our Facebook page, I'm showing you doing its job.
Yeah.
What it's supposed to do.
Awesome.
And the monarch loves it. So keep that in mind. We'll touch base on it as well. You know, talking about the heat, we're talking about water.
Right. We just a couple of weeks ago, we talked about we had way too much water.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the product we'd put on our landscape and on our lawn could have washed away. But now we're facing a little different issue.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly that can just go from one extreme to the other. Mm-hmm. And that's usually how things around here take place. You go from extreme dry to extreme wet, you name it. But when I came back from New York the other day, I've yet to turn on my irrigation system. And right out there, not the total entire lawn, but right where the strip that I had between the sidewalk and the street and near the driveway, I could tell it was starting to get a little stressed.
Yeah.
And that's where those problems originate, because all that heat that radiates off the pavement, off of the street, off of the sidewalk, those things that are surrounding it or closest to, they're the ones that starts, you start seeing the stress look as a lack of water because of a lack of water.
Mm.
So keep this in mind as we progress throughout the summer months, Ernie. We need to at least keep an inch of water on our lawn. That's so, so important.
Now, you mentioned your irrigation system. Do you have a timer meter on it that says if it's on so long, you've applied an inch of water, or do you have a rain gauge out there? How do you measure that?
I've gone through the process a long time ago, and that's a great question, by the way. I just brought that up to a customer the other day that had asked the same question.
Mm-hmm.
What I did, I just took a couple tuna cans, and I had placed them strategically out in the lawn and timed it. Now, there are those areas that you'll have overlapping heads,
mm-hmm.
you know, where the pattern, how it kind of works, to where those cans, if you place the tuna can there, will fill up a lot quicker than just the area that one head only gets and not two overlap.
I got you.
So kind of get the gist of where of all the areas, and then based upon how long it takes to fill that tuna can, you got an inch of rain.
Right.
So that's how I described it as, you know, trying to approach it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
There was someone in the store the other day, and she was having a serious issues with dahlias. I love dahlias, by the way. But typically, you know, dahlias do not want to stay overly wet. And she had gone on to say that she was watering three times a week.
Ooh.
And I'm like, whoa, already, too.
Yeah.
Already. Yeah. On top of, you know, we've had quite a bit of precipitation, you know, late winter, early spring. So I was like, you know, I don't want to see you do that. And she goes, well, how much should I water? And just as I explained, the best way to do it is to take a tuna can, turn on your sprinkler, you know, place it strategically, just a couple of them,
mm-hmm.
and time it.
Eat the tuna first.
Eat the tuna first, yes. I like tuna, by the way.
I do, too.
Eat the tuna first. But that's an easy way to do it. Or if you have a rain gauge. But think about it. With a rain gauge, a lot of times, you know, it's a cylindrical type of tube. You know, I think the size of the tuna can and the depth of the tuna can gives you a little bit better representation of what you can expect,
mm-hmm.
you know, time-wise. And it works well when you think of it as such. Now, when we talk about watering the lawn, and as I explained to you, this particular customer had told me their sprinkler comes on three times a week. I guess Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I don't know.
All right.
But it's too often. I'd rather see you water less often, but longer, for longer periods.
Give it a good drink.
A good deep drink, because you want your roots to go deep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You don't want just enough water up on the surface of the soil, or just barely beneath it, to where the roots stay shallow. That's not healthy for your lawn. So the deeper the drink, the better it is for your lawn. And also, what's important as well, when you mow, I always like to mow my lawn on a second highest setting. I don't want to scalp it. When you scalp it, what you're doing is you're really stressing the lawn out. You're opening up that soil surface to more sunlight. And a lot of times, too, it makes it a little bit easier for weeds to penetrate and get into the lawn.
Oh. Okay.
So, you know, when you're cutting and mowing your lawn at a taller height, what it's doing, it's shading the soil surface, helping with a little bit of moisture retention because of that shading element.
Gotcha.
So that comes into play. Also, we put a lot of emphasis on this, you and I, and we talk about our good friends over at Bud Herbert Motors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having a good sharp blade, too, on your mower is extremely, extremely important because it's a nice clean cut. You can look at that turf blade at the tip, and when it's jagged, that's not a good sign that your blade is sharp.
Yes.
So you lose, your turf loses more moisture that way.
At that point, you're just tearing. You're not cutting.
That's right. Well put, man. You're like on your game this morning. Is that the meds?
It must be.
Is that the meds talking?
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
But, you know, when it comes to watering, you know, if you're not sure if something needs to be watered, always just use your index finger, check it out. I mean, you can pretty well, I mean, just intuitively, I mean, it's just common sense. You can pretty much tell if something needs
sure.
to be watered.
Sure.
And not only is watering important for our lawns, and that's what we're kind of talking about there and focusing on, but at the same token, there's a lot of other things in and around the house, the landscape, the decks, the patios, the front porches, our window boxes, that also need attention and that needs the right attention when it comes to watering as well. And we'll touch base on that when we come back out of the break.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We talk about this a lot, too. We're going to post this on our page. Farm to Table Dinner, a fundraiser for Owen County Farm and Craft Market, is going to be happening on June the 16th. We're posting that info for us. It's a great deal. Some fantastic people down there. And there is nothing more delicious than some fresh food right from the farm.
You know, I totally agree, and let's hone in on that a little bit after a while in this morning's program, because I picked up an interesting flyer when I was up in New York at one of the farmers markets.
Okay. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk about some farm-to-table stuff, and...
Well, we're going to also touch on, you know, we were talking about watering the lawn.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just the lawn. It's our hanging baskets, our window boxes, and so forth. A few tips on how to water properly and keep things looking great as we progress into the summer and as it gets hotter.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And going to be a beautiful day to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center or florist. And get some stuff together and then get out in your yard. As I mentioned earlier, Lisa has just been tearing it up around the house and getting a lot of things looking fantastic. Still plenty of great selection at your garden center.
Absolutely.
And but when you do get it and get it out there, you got to make sure you keep it watered.
Very important. Mm-hmm. And especially this time of year, you know, we want to keep those hanging baskets looking really, really, really nice. And when it comes to watering hanging baskets, totally different game than some of those plants that we have in our landscape beds or in some of our larger containers. You know, when the basket is out there just hanging, you know, there's a lot of elements there. There's the sun that comes into play. There's the wind and so forth. And it's not usually as big of a pot as some of our pots that are on our decks and patios and porches and so forth. So therefore, we need to be a little bit more diligent. And, you know, especially when it comes to checking the water with our hanging baskets. And we've all of us, including me, have fallen victim to forgetting about watering that hanging basket before we leave for work early in the morning.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you come home, and it's like laying down. Looks like it's on a lounge chair. And you're like, oh.
It's looking forgotten.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
And you know, honestly, sometimes you can get away with that a time or two, but the more often that occurs, when we forget about that hanging basket and it wilts down to just a where it merely looks like nothing at all, that's not good.
No.
So always check those hanging baskets. And when you water your hanging baskets, do your best, if at all possible, just to gently take your hand, lift the foliage up. And when I say that, or the blooms, I'm talking about the things that might be draping over the side of your hanging basket.
Right.
Take your hose or your watering can and water underneath the foliage. You'll save yourself a lot of headaches down the road. That's just a good watering practice and habit to get into. A lot of times when you water on top with those hanging baskets, especially petunias, they'll want to lay flat.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, before long, they don't look like they did when you purchased them.
Sure.
Sometimes that has to do with your watering habits.
Yeah, and again, there are elements that the wind blows a little bit, blows the water off, it evaporates quicker, and doesn't benefit the plant at all.
Not at all. And you want to keep those annuals, like, looking stellar, because color is what it's all about, especially this time of year. You know, we're having a lot of parties and so forth and friends over. So check those hanging baskets every morning before you leave for work. If they need a drink, give them a drink. Check them when you come home. Sometimes, especially the real large baskets or those that have the cocoa liners. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
They, you know, the cocoa liner basket sometimes as well has a little bit of a tendency to dry out quicker. So you need to be on your game. Also, really, really important with your hanging baskets is that probably, and I like to get on a nice kind of fertilization program.
Mm-hmm.
I love Jack's Classic, petunia feed especially. But, you know, use whatever fertilizer you have. Fertilize your baskets, your hanging baskets, about every 10 days. You'll keep them looking really nice.
Huh.
Because every time you water, in addition to what the plants take up from a nutrient standpoint,
mm-hmm.
you're also flushing some of those through. So you need to add a little bit back to it.
Sure.
You know, it's like you at the dinner table. Sometimes you want to come back for seconds. You need it, you know?
Yeah.
And ferns the same way. And you don't have to worry about overwatering your Boston ferns. They'll take as much water as you can throw their way. And sometimes, I'm not going to point fingers, but when it comes to Boston ferns, be very selective about who you're purchasing your Boston ferns from. Check them out thoroughly, because a lot of times there are some big boxes and other places that get these Boston ferns up out of Florida.
Right.
And they get them on the cheap. They sell them on the cheap, and they're root bound, and you can't keep them watered well
sure.
enough. So they need to be bumped up.
That leads us to discuss something about the farther away that the plants and the vegetables travel, the more likely the damage or the age of the plant is, I guess, disguised.
You know, there's a lot of truth to that in many ways, Ernie, because I'll give you a perfect example. A lot of times when things come up out of Florida, which a lot of things do, don't get me wrong, this is why it's even more important to stay local, buy local. A lot of times when those plants are on a truck and they're wrapped up on a cart with plastic, and the truck driver just maybe want to take his good old time or
right.
an extra day or two. That's not good being on that truck in that trailer in darkness for that long period of time.
Sure.
So, that's why it's even more important to buy local. And, you know, you're just going to get a better product, a fresher product. The quality is there.
Right. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And since you brought up buying local, when we come back, we're going to give you some very good reasons to do that.
Especially when it comes to markets, support our local markets when it comes to produce here in the Cincinnati area. I picked up this really cool flyer, 10 Reasons to Buy Local. And this is all about our markets here locally, especially Findlay, the one over at Lumpkin, and all throughout.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's going to be a beautiful day, a great weekend to get out and get some stuff done in the lawn or in your landscape, and to go visit some of our fabulous local markets. And we always talk about this, 68% or 68 cents of every dollar you spend at a local establishment stays in the local economy. And Tony has some great reasons why to do this.
Well, that is so true, because all the local businesses here in a tri-state area and all throughout the U.S., they are the cornerstone. They are the foundations of our communities, and mm-hmm. support our local businesses. When I was up in New York, we were at a couple of the outdoor markets, and I happened to pick up a flyer. And I'll just go over a couple of these with you, but it, like 10 reasons to buy local. And you and I were talking about this a moment ago. Local food tastes better.
Oh.
We know that. I mean, that's given. You know, that's intuitive. We know that. So simply put, I mean, food that's brought in from far away, typically it's traveled on trucks and trailers, on planes or what have you, or sometimes perhaps it sits in warehouses and so forth, and ages a little bit before it finally gets to us.
Mm-hmm.
What did you say about those blackberries that you were enjoying for a while?
That was that's a really good point there. Strawberries came in, blackberries and raspberries. I was just on a tear there because mm-hmm. everything was so fresh.
Right.
And I noticed when I would go to the grocery store, and it happened at all of them. I'm not going to mention them by name, but suddenly, you know, they were there and they were so fresh and so great. And then in the blink of an eye, it seemed like, oh, you know, let's for instance say they were $3.99 for a little basket of blackberries.
Mm-hmm.
Within the week, they were $2 for $4 because they were starting to go bad.
Sure.
So they had arrived, I guess, and gotten put out to be purchased, and then suddenly just started to slip away. So that tells me that they have come from far away.
A lot of times, that's the truth. You know, also, local food, it's better for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's really, it's this simple. The shorter the time between whatever it is that we harvest or whatever it is that we purchase here at local markets, the shorter that time between when it's harvested and goes to our table or, you know, it's on our table.
Yeah.
It's less likely that there's been any nutrient loss. You know, sometimes you hear that when foods sit around for a while, they're not as nutritious.
Sure.
Now, I'm not a nutritionist, and I can't say that from a scientific standpoint, but it's pretty much been the general consensus. Yeah. So, you know, local food is better for us, you know. So staying local, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it brings me back to one of my favorite childhood things that we would, where we grew up out there on Old 17. We would go up on Wilson's Mountain and take some baskets. Mom would send us up there every once in a while to pick as many blackberries as we could, and she'd make homemade blackberry jam cake.
Ooh, that sounds really good.
It was wonderful. I preferred the batter, but better more than right. the cake. Well, I was always the little fat kid in the kitchen wanting to.
I can see you doing that. Yeah. Absolutely. I've seen you in this kitchen do that, so I can relate.
Yeah.
Old habits are hard to break, aren't they,
Yes,
Ernie?
They are.
And, you know, another reason to buy local is that, for the most part, a lot of our local farmers, they're very responsible, mm-hmm. and they aren't trying to remain anonymous about what it is that they're doing when they're growing things. So local food is a lot safer, you know, in a lot of ways.
Right.
I mean, you ever sometimes, you know, and I know we got to take certain measures with certain items or types of produce when we're at the grocery store. And, you know, if this wasn't becoming an issue, we wouldn't have organic sections today.
Sure.
And my wife gravitates towards those sections.
Mm-hmm.
Get those lemons, get those limes, you know, they're juicier.
Right.
You know, or the cucumbers, for example, if you like to use cucumbers in certain things or drinks, you know, sometimes you get those cucumbers where they're really waxy on the outside.
Right.
So it's interesting to say the least, but I think a lot of, for the most part, the food that we buy locally at our farmers markets, it's a lot safer.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about how important it is to buy and shop and support locals. We also have Linda on the line from Villa Hills, Tony, who has a knockout rose question for you when we come back.
All right.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Linda on the line from Villa Hills. Got a knockout rose question for you. Hi, Linda. Thanks for hanging on.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, guys?
Wonderful. Thanks.
I have a knockout rose that has that rosette disease, and my question is, do I need to get rid of it or cut it back or what?
Ooh, how old is the rose, Linda?
Oh, it's about 3 or 4 years old.
That's unfortunate. Me personally, and you know, there's a few different takes on this or a couple of different spins, I would remove it. I think once it's in the plant, it's there. A lot of times we've had some discussions before in the past with Tim Wood from Star Roses, and if it's early in the stages of the rose rosette, a lot of times they think, too, keeping it pruned back annually and down may be a benefit.
They always cut them back in the spring.
Right, and I still think the jury might be out on that. That's me personally. The good thing about it is that if you were to lift that out of that location, is that you can plant another rose bush in its place without, you know, any repercussion. But you must get all of the root out first.
There's another one that's right by it. Will that affect that one?
It eventually could.
Oh, okay.
It could. And, you know, this is something that's, it's very interesting. And if you were to look at a chart on the, like a chart of the U.S., like a little ink blot type of chart, right here in the Midwest, that disease that you're talking about, rose rosette, is prevalent. I mean, it has run rampant for a number of years.
Yeah, I didn't know why it was. I heard you talking on the radio that one time about it.
Yeah. What does the growth on it look like now? Is it kind of...
It's real red, and the leaves, you know, on the end are real red.
Yeah, the texture of it's not right?
Right.
Yeah, have you noticed a lot of thorns on some of the canes more than normal by chance?
I didn't notice that. I just noticed, you know, the roses don't want to come out. They're like real tiny little knots and, you know, and everything's real red.
Yeah, they're somewhat deformed.
Right.
Well, some of the new growth on the knockout is red, too. Maybe,
No, I've had a knockout roses for about 10 years and that, so, I know this one's different. And
yeah. And you're speaking from a trained eye, knowing what to expect.
Right.
And, and that's one of those intuitive things, I think, as a gardener or a homeowner that's really important is pay attention to what's going on with your plants because they tell you what's happening.
Oh, trust me, I do.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, and I'm going to be honest with you, too. A lot of that, when we talk about pruning our rose bushes in late winter, early spring, That's why it's important to sanitize our pruners before we go to the next rose bush.
Yeah, and I always put that systemic drench down on them, too.
Uh-huh. And which is a great product, by the way. However, it is a product that does not work against mites. And the little aerified mite is the one that kind of just rides the wind, and the imidacloprid is not effective on it. And that's why we have that problem.
Well, I've got a blue spruce, one of those little round balls, and it's getting some brown needles on it, too. And I know I heard you once about blue spruces are having problems now, but I didn't get what to put on them.
Is it just the tip, or is it going back into it a little further?
I think it's going a little further. And I've only had it down about a year and a half.
Okay. Could be a couple of things. One, you know, sometimes, you know, when we start getting dry, we'll start seeing some spider mite issues, the red spider mite. Very hard to detect. However, if you were to take a sample of that into the extension office, they can certainly take a look at it and tell you exactly what's going on. Also, with some of the blue spruces, there's a disease issue that's kind of plagued them off and on called rhizosphera. That has a lot to do with some of the damp, cool weather that we had this spring that sets into the foliage, the needles itself, and gives you that needle cast disease where it drops some of the needles.
Uh-huh.
It could certainly be that. And you can spray that with like mancozeb or chlorothalonil, any type of fungicide will help tremendously.
Okay.
We're starting to get on the tail end of it being effective at this time of year. And usually when you see that disease, I had it in mine last year, and surprisingly, I didn't really realize I would see new growth this season, but I have. On my blue spruce, I had an area that was affected by rhizosphera, and by the time you typically see it, it's a little too late to spray and protect it. But that's one of the measures that you can take. The other thing, especially with your globosa, the blue spruce, is it a low graft or a high graft? Is it like tree form, or is it a low round ball?
It's a low.
Okay.
I mean, it comes up maybe 4 or 5 feet.
Okay. The other thing, too, is sometimes when you see a little bit of the tips of your blue spruces where they're like a light tan color,
uh-huh.
A lot of times that could be diplodia, D-I-P-L-O-D-I-A, tip blight. So those are things you just need to pay attention to. Take some samples into your extension office, and you can use either anything with chlorothalonil in it or daconil. And that will help you with some of those issues with your blue spruce.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I appreciate your help.
You're welcome. Yeah. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks. You too. Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We still have a couple of things we're going to get to. We want to make sure we got Linda all hooked up with her rose bush.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate about the rose bushes, you know, mm-hmm. when you talk about rosette. But I will tell you this, for whatever reason this year, and I said this a few weeks ago, knockout roses are really looking good. And I know some of us have had to replace some of those. And still, when they're healthy, and you take care of them properly, yeah. they're wonderful in the landscape, and they give you a pop of color. And I just got some in the other day at the garden center, and they look good. But unfortunately,
yep.
sometimes that's what we got to face, you know, rosette, or oftentimes Lisa was down and bought some of the drench. You know, when we talk about the rose slug issues,
mm-hmm.
Jen Petunas sent me an email the other day. She's got issues with her roses. There's some steps that we need to take, and you got to be willing to take those steps to have good looking rose bushes.
And it's fascinating that how attached we get to roses. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on in the show, but also a couple of other things when we come back.
We're going to still hammer in on some reasons to stay local. It's all about local businesses.
Yep.
What about you, Ernie?
Local
you
businesses.
In? All right,
we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And speaking of local, we were talking about some great reasons to continue to shop and support our local industries, businesses, and markets. And Tony has compiled a list of 10 great reasons to do that.
Well, I wish I could say that I compiled this list.
I was giving you the credit.
Found this list. It just resonated, and I thought, this is great and well put. And picked up this list when I was up at one of the local markets, outdoor markets up in New York, and I thought this is across the board. You know, this is not city specific. It's not state specific. It's everywhere. It's local mm-hmm. communities. And, you know, we talk about this all the time, especially with the garden centers in the tri-state area. Supporting local garden centers is extremely important. And I will tell you this as well. I know last year up at the Independent Garden Center show, just to give you an example, what's occurring in our industry, and I think it's one of the most ludicrous things that you can get involved in, is internet sales when it comes to plants.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the most foolish things, and I still can't wrap my arms around it. And I'm not just saying this because I'm involved with the plant industry or the horticultural world, but Amazon.com was a big player or attender last year, attendee, up at the IGC show. And they're looking for big growers. They want to be the number one online plant purveyor, order taker in a couple of years. That's their goal,
right?
From what I understand. And buying something online, I don't get it. You want to see that plant. And the thing of it is, online, you're not connecting with somebody like you would locally at
sure.
an independent garden center or nursery.
Yeah.
And where you can talk about that plant, what you can expect from that plant, how to take care of that plant, and getting a top quality plant. You know, there's no comparison. There's some things that you can buy online, but living things, it's tough. It really is tough. And, you know, I'm saying this straight up. Beware.
Right.
And you don't know what you're going to get. And I hear it all the time.
Buying a bag full of sticks online doesn't mean you're supporting Arbor Day.
No. as a matter of fact, I just talked to a gentleman the other day that bought a bunch of stuff online from a well-known gardening magazine, and everything he bought, it's struggling.
Mm.
And I'm not saying he bought something inferior, but you don't know what you're buying.
Right.
They could tell you one thing and it's another. To me, it doesn't work that way. Stay local. You're going to get the best information from your local independent nurseries and garden centers. And I don't want to beat that up, but it's important.
Sure. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we do have a listener on the line. We have Ralph from Loveland, who's got a question for you about the best time to deal with some of the clover in his yard. Hi, Ralph. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, thank you. In the springtime, my grass is real nice, but like now, clover just taking over.
Yeah, I've seen quite a bit of clover, and as a matter of fact, I just saw a little bit on the edge of my front yard the other day, and you know that comes into play in relation to what your neighbors have.
Yeah.
But I want to caution you about this, and then we'll talk about how to get rid of it. But now, as we start getting above 85 degrees.
Yeah.
I do not want you to spray anything on your lawn.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering about when would be the best time to do it.
Yeah, this past week would have been ideal, and I didn't even get to it myself. I've been busy trying to get caught up. But when we were below 85, go for it, and use anything that has a good fair amount of 2,4-D in it, dicamba, carfentrazone. Weed Free Zone is a good product we talk about often, and you'll be successful with it. Do you have a lot?
Yeah, about an acre.
An acre?
That I mow.
Well, that would be quite cumbersome. I mean, you would have to buy quite a bit of product, not that I'm trying to talk you out of it by any means. Would you?
I got one of those big tank sprayers, you know, you pulled.
Right. You know, in your particular situation, now, in the environment that I'm involved in, you know, the retail environment for the typical homeowner who doesn't have over a half acre or so,
yeah.
In your situation, going to a co-op to buy, you know, larger bottles or concentrates would be better suited?
Yeah.
But what you want to make sure is that you're getting a good, ample amount of 2,4-D, carfentrazone or dicamba, that combination.
Yeah.
And you'll be a lot more successful with it. But spraying above 85 is of the essence. You know, all of a sudden you can do more harm to the turf than you are likely to get rid of it, what you're trying to spray.
Yeah. Well, would it be better to do it in the fall?
Late summer. But my question for you would be, what are your intentions after you kill everything? Are you going to overseed?
Well, I hadn't thought about that yet.
Well, if you
like in the spring, you know, I go to Florida for the winter, but then when I come back to spring and start mowing, the grass is just beautiful. But
right,
last couple of years, just clover, right now especially, has just took over.
Yeah, that it has, unfortunately. And, you know, it's one of the more difficult to get rid of perennial weeds.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of people that are listening, too. They're going to say, hey, clover's great for the bees. That it is. And there's a lot of people that are okay with clover being in the lawn. It stays green.
Yeah.
You know, only time something is a weed is when you don't want it.
Yeah.
You know, so the thing of it is, if you have quite a bit, have a plan B as to, are you going to sow seed? So that's going to dictate how you time this.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to sow seed, then my suggestion would be, if there's that much clover in the lawn, is to spray it like in August, the latter part of August.
Yeah.
And be ready to turn the corner and sow grass seed in September, because the fall is the ideal time to sow grass seed. But when you use a selective herbicide to get rid of clover, there's like a 14-day waiting period before you can sow grass seed.
Yeah.
So always read the labels, okay?
Yeah.
Well, let us know what you do. And, hey, you know, if it's not bothering you or anyone else, leave it be. Just, you know, enjoy Florida during the winter months.
It really bothers my wife, though.
A happy wife's a happy life, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, well, then I'll just down one of your feed stores or your stores.
Who are you close to?
He's in Loveland.
So. Yeah, I'm right off 28 in Loveland.
Grant's Farm is out that way.
Yeah, you can pick up some of that product out there. And you know, I don't know what size sprayer that you have with your tractor or that pull along.
Bard's Nurseries.
Bard's is out there. Yeah, any of those guys. You're like Weed Free Zone, it's going to be like 2.5 ounces to a gallon of water. That just gives you an indicator or an indication as to how much product you're going to need to fill up your tank sprayer.
Yeah, I think it holds 24 gallons.
24 gallons? Yeah, that's doable. Just stop at one of those guys' garden centers and pick up the Weed Free Zone. But I caution you, don't spray above 85.
Yeah, I won't. Don't I might wait till this fall.
There you go.
Good idea.
Okay,
right. Thanks,
Ralph.
Have a good weekend.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we were still talking about those 10 reasons to shop local. Where are you on your
list? We were talking about how local food tastes better.
Yes.
And how much better it is for you to purchase, because, you know, there's not that risk of nutrient loss because it was sitting around for a period of time.
Uh-huh.
That it's safe. Most of our local farmers are very responsible when they're growing produce and bringing it to the markets. It also builds the community in a lot of ways. You know, you have, when you buy direct from a farmer or people who are growing here locally, you're connecting, you know, to the community. You're connecting everybody together. Mm-hmm. We're all promoting one another. So, and that gives you access to a way of getting your kids involved and exposing them to the farmers markets and so forth. So there's a lot of community building when it comes to buying local. And who doesn't remember going to the markets with your parents when you were a youngster?
Yeah.
And also, you know, it benefits the environment in a lot of ways too, because those who grow locally, they're, like I said, they're responsible, and they're trying to you know, manage their farms and keep their soil fertile and all that good stuff, and using cleaner water. And it just, it's best all the way around just to stay local.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. A couple of great ways to stay connected with us. The phone. You can also jump onto our In and Around the House Facebook page. We do have that info posted about the farm to table benefit coming up next weekend. And Tony, we have Ruth from Indiana on the line. She has a question about her daylilies. Hi, Ruth. Thanks for hanging on.
Yes. I got it for Easter. It's in a pot, in a flower pot. Of course, all the leaves are dying off. But at the bottom of the plant, above the ground, are four little white nodules, round nodes, but, you know, just round white little beads, like, that came up. And I'm wondering, can I plant that in a container and keep it in the house over the winter so it'll bloom again?
Let's go back. You got this for Easter?
Yes, it's a white Easter lily.
It's an Easter lily. Okay, okay, okay. I want to make sure it's an Easter lily and not a day lily. Okay.
Yes, it's an Easter lily.
What I would do, so most of the foliage has died back?
Yes.
I would plant that outside.
That's what I thought about doing.
Absolutely.
I wanted to make sure.
No, go ahead and plant it outside, and you can expect to see it bloom and do its thing for you sometime next June.
Okay, can I cut the top part back, or I just leave it alone?
If it's all brown, you can cut the top part of it out, you know.
Okay.
And what's important about that is you're allowing all that energy and reserve from the foliage to go back into and support the bulb.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead and plant it. And, you know, call us next year. Please call us.
Okay.
And let us know, you know, if you see any movement, it's coming up. You're seeing a lot of the lilies now in bloom, especially the Asiatics and so forth. It's lily time right now. So, you know, your bulb for the Easter season was forced, and you can typically see it do its normal life cycle. Once you get it into the ground, you'll see it sometime in June.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. You have a great weekend. Bye.
Thanks. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. A lot of plant questions. Everybody's getting an itch, and we encourage you to do that. Get out and get about it today.
That's right. And stay local. That's what we've been honing in on this morning. And I want to touch and say one final thing about being local, Ernie, that buying local, be it food or from local businesses and so forth, you're investing in the future.
Yes.
You are investing in the future of your community. That's so, so important. And just for example, like we're talking about farmers markets and so forth. When you support local farmers today, you are helping to ensure that those farms will be there in your community tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say it any better than that.
I don't think you could. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
There's some things I want to touch on, I think, that we should do now. Just for the mere fact, you know, we had quite a bit of moisture this spring, and it has to do with the landscape beds. And if you take these measures now, you're going to save yourself a lot of time from having to get on your knees and do a little pooling down the road.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. Get it around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's going to be a great weekend to get some stuff done. It is going to be warm, so we want you to make sure you stay hydrated. Sunny skies for today, tomorrow, and Monday. The temperatures today will be in the 80s and then close to 90 tomorrow and Monday. So the heat wave, the pools are open, and everybody's ready.
Pools are open. That's a good thing. That's for sure. Hey, also I want to point out that the Covington Garden Tour kicks off today, as a matter of fact. We're going to be talking with Holly Young here in a little while. And that takes place today over in Covington in the Old Seminary Square area and the west side of Covington. So they're going to be featuring the gardens and parks of Seminary Square. And also, you can pick up tickets at the corner of Russell Street and West Robbins. Some really neat old homes down in that area, Ernie.
Beautiful.
And beautiful gardens, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want more information about this, you can go to info@covingtongardentour.com. And while we're on this subject, how about maybe caller number 6? We'll make sure that there's 2 tickets for you to pick up at this garden tour today or tomorrow. And again, you'll pick those up at the corner of Russell Street and West Robbins in Covington. Definitely while we're seeing, we'll give away a couple tickets to caller number 6. How's that?
Fantastic idea. Also want to remind you, we'll post that information on our Facebook page. And please take the time to check out the farm-to-table dinner, Owen County Farm and Craft Markets. It's a 2017 fundraiser featuring locally grown foods prepared by Chef Michael Bradley. There'll be live music down there. It's in Owenton, Kentucky. And all the information is available on our Facebook page, which is a great way to stay connected with us. And you can post pictures and pose questions, and we will get to you. As a matter of fact, honey, we do have a couple of those questions that we'll visit in just a few minutes. But I just absolutely have loved the weather over the last couple of days. And I mentioned earlier, my wife Lisa has really been tearing it up.
I'm glad she's got you covered.
I can't do it. You know, the bad back.
Yeah, you're going to make her back hurt, too. She's carrying you around.
But spend an awful lot of time in the flower beds, and we've got those rocking. And that's very important for you to take the time now to get all of that squared away. It's still early. I mean, it's only the 10th of June.
It's only the 10th of June. I'm glad you said that, because there's, and the reason why I'm bringing this up again, and I'm putting a lot of emphasis on it, is that we still have a lot of season ahead of us to plant, plenty of planting time. Get out to your local garden centers. You know, hey, if you're over in northern Kentucky, you know, Scott at Maddox. You got Todd and the gang down there in Union at Baton's. You have us at Jackson Florist. You know, north side of the river, Jim over there at Lakeview Nursery. Ed's Feed and Seed. You know, you got the guys at Schwab Nursery. You have... oh, Danny Grant and those guys.
Sure.
And Bob Bard over there at Bard's Nursery. And let's see, we got I can just go on and on. Burger Farms. You know, a lot of great plant material out there. Just visit some of the local garden centers. We have fresh stuff. And if it's not looking good, we make sure it leaves the place.
We're
getting rid of the old and bringing in the new for you. There's still a lot of time to plant. As a matter of fact, I was really surprised when I came back from New York the other day. We've been steady. And there are a lot of people have echoed the same thing. It's like, yeah, I'm still trying to get caught up. We still have some of the planting to do. We've yet to get to. So it's still happening.
Sure. A couple of my favorite birds have returned. Of course, we'll love the hummingbird, but finch has now changed.
Yeah.
And I ran over to Fetter's Feed and Seed there over there on Dudley and got some peanuts for the Blue Jays. And within probably, I would say, 20 minutes from putting the peanuts out in the peanut ring that I got from Ed's Feed and Seed up north, there were 7 Blue Jays. And I hadn't really noticed much of a battle between the birds before, but apparently they were really interested in getting loaded up on these peanuts. And there was one bird, one Blue Jay, that kept getting chased away. Apparently he was the young bird in the group. And within a few minutes, I just loved how he developed a plan. He would sit on the ground once he got chased off of the bird feeders, and he waited his turn, and there would be a peanut that maybe on the bottom of the ring was poking out just a little bit. He'd fly up, snag it, and go before they could chase him off. I must have spent a half an hour out there just watching the Blue Jays.
That's always fun to do.
Oh,
it really is.
So relaxing.
It's funny how you just watch, you know, animal behavior, bird behavior. Sometimes it's quite comical how they just determine how they want to do things or go about taking food out of the feeder and so forth. So that's always a fun thing. And you said that, and you said something else too. Yeah, the hummingbirds, they're back.
Yeah.
They're in full fledge.
Yeah, you know, we had another wonderful experience too a couple of days ago, because I did miss 3 days because of the back issue. And a mother deer had dropped her fawn off, I guess I'm saying this correctly, in the backyard. And through talking to several friends, that's what they do. They will take them someplace and leave them, then go forage and get some food, and then come back and get up at dusk. Well, apparently one of the cats stumbled onto it. And so it trotted back and forth up and down the fence line. And just a young thing. But boy, was it just gorgeous. So after the little fawn scared off the cat, it found another little place to lay next to the stump. And we have some of those clover issues too. They don't bother us up on that part of the hill. But when this thing laid down, if you weren't looking for it, you weren't going to see it.
Yeah, with the little white spots and so forth.
And it just tucked its head down in the front part of its legs. And then sure enough, I hear Lisa call for me right about dusk. And said, well, Mom's back. And there was a doe in the backyard that gathered her up, and they trotted off. Beautiful stuff.
Love it. Oh, it is. Nothing like getting connected with nature. Other than when the deer are eating your hostas, Ernie.
Yeah.
You know, that's a whole other topic right there. It's fun to watch, but on the other hand, it's aggravating, too.
Can be.
It's aggravating. Hey, I wanted to also point out, you know, actually, I found this out just recently. Today is National Herbs and Spices Day.
Oh.
How many national days are there?
There's some of these things for every day.
And it's kind of like one of the topics I was wanting to talk about as well, you know, herbs. I just kind of finished up planting some of our herbs in our raised beds. And always this time of year, I'm a little late getting some of my things in. I'm not as quick as some others because I'm always busy working. But I still do my best to get some things in. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about, I'm going to tease you a little bit, I think, here. Because I know you like to eat.
Well,
but
yeah.
This, I know we've not done a little around the table kind of segment in a while, but I did something the other day around the table that was to die for. And it was a recipe that I kind of stumbled across out of a magazine I had cut out, and I finally got to it. And this recipe, Ernie, you would have even liked this. I know you like bratwurst. It was just like to die for, especially, and that's what I want to hone in on. So when we come back out of the break, I want to talk about the plants that I'm going to talk about of the week, which are going to be herbs since today's National Herbs and Spice Day. And I'm also going to spin on it a cucumber type of blueberry slaw that I did with this recipe.
Maybe after the show, we can go down that. Herbs and Thelma's and have breakfast.
There you go.
I know where you know that.
I know where that is.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And I want to take a second and remind you, we're going to try to help you out. Father's Day is coming up quickly. And we have a couple of great gift ideas for you. You can enter below, or you can enter to win a $100 gift card from Jackson Florist and Bushelman Supply and give a little dad a little something to, you know, help out around the yard work.
That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a gift offer, definitely for dad. And, you know, some other ones, too. I was thinking about this the other day, and plenty of time to pick up some things for dad for Father's Day. This is not last minute, but I can't say this enough, but having some really nice bypass hand pruners. I pick those up at your local garden centers and nurseries. I can't tell you how important having some good pruners are. I value mine. They're always on me. Whenever I need them, I have them. And also, I always say this, too. Buy a holster.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just fits on your belt or it clips onto your side pocket or what have you. But it's always there. You don't lay them down somewhere and forget where you placed them.
Instead of doing the Ernie Brown.
Oh.
I wonder where that is. Where did I have that last?
I need to do something like that for my glasses, my cheaters. I spent a lot of time looking for my glasses.
There's an easy way for you to register for the Father's Day Backyard Makeover by going on to B105.com, jump onto the contest page and look for In and Around the House. Fill that out and you'll be automatically registered.
Well, you know what, and I want to get back to what I was talking about with herbs, but when we come back out of our next break, I want to talk about, I even have some more suggestions for Father's Day gifts, especially if Dad likes the garden.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm glad you brought that up, as a matter of fact. But I want to point this out, and I'm going to tie this into a recipe I did the other day.
Okay.
And it wasn't my recipe, and I forgot where I got this from, but I'm telling you, it was incredible. But these are my five must-have herbs. If you're going to grow herbs and you like to cook and you enjoy the culinary element of herbs, you got to have these five.
Okay.
Bar none. Basil.
Oh, yeah.
Love basil, especially if you like to make pesto. You got to have it. You got to have it. And the second one, you want to throw your 2 cents in on this?
I don't have 2 cents.
Come on.
If I had your money, I'd burn my money.
I'm glad you would. Yeah. I just bought a yacht, as a matter of fact, and a corporate jet, by the way. Yeah. I'm loaded. Second must-have herb, rosemary.
Rosemary.
Great on potatoes, especially if you're cooking things on a grill or marinating things with a little balsamic vinaigrette type of thing. You got to have rosemary.
Now you're talking my language.
Got to have rosemary.
So I guess thyme is in there somewhere?
Thyme's in my top five.
Yeah?
Absolutely. You know why I like thyme? It's got a little, you know, it's got that Italian taste to it, obviously. You always find thyme in Italian types of seasonings. When I do my pizza dough, I always put thyme in it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How much time does it take?
It takes a lot of time. No pun intended. You're so funny. Don't quit your daytime.
No.
Don't do stand-up, all right? Another must-have is oregano. I think oregano really adds a great value to a marinara sauce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it enriches it.
Yeah.
So you have to have oregano. And my next must-have is parsley. Parsley has an interesting taste to it. And, you know, I really like it sometimes just on potatoes with butter.
Oh, okay.
Really good taste to it.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads me to this recipe that I did, because I brought in a couple fresh herbs with this recipe. All right, out of the garden. It was fresh dill and fresh parsley. And it really enlightened this recipe. But anyway, it was a recipe for bratwurst.
Ooh.
With a cucumber blueberry slaw.
A what?
A cucumber blueberry slaw.
Wow.
Now, what's interesting, and I was trying to wrap my arms around figuring out where the blueberries were going to come into play here.
I wouldn't necessarily put those two together.
But I'm going to post a picture of this, too, because everything I talk about, when I talk about, you know, around the table, when it's mm-hmm. food-related, coming from the garden, I do it. I'm not just making it up. I do it.
Right.
But this, the blueberry slaw, I used a Savoy cabbage, which I'd never used before. You know, there's different types of cabbage. There's Napa cabbage, regular cabbage, red cabbage. The Savoy cabbage has a different texture to it. It also has, I thought for the first time when I had it, that a little more of a bitter taste, but I liked it nonetheless.
Okay.
So I started with the Savoy cabbage. I used fresh cucumber, slices of cucumber. I did fresh blueberries. I used green onions, and I mixed this with buttermilk, mayo, fresh parsley, fresh dill from the garden, a little bit of garlic, a little bit of salt, a little bit of black pepper, and mixed this all together, and it was awesome on this bratwurst.
Had you been drinking when you were thinking about putting all this stuff together?
No. As a matter of fact, that's what makes it even more interesting. I wasn't drinking.
But you got to go through that list again. I don't know what makes you think that all those are going to go together. I guess just thinking, you know what? I'd like to throw a little bit of this in there. And
well, you ever been to some different various ballparks? Like I remember one time being down in Atlanta at a Braves game, and they had a whole type of brat and met bar,
yeah,
with various toppings of your choice.
Okay,
and when I saw this recipe with this slaw on top of the bratwurst, it just looked so summery, so invigorating, refreshing. But anyway, let me tell you how I cooked the bratwurst.
Okay.
Brought it to a boil in apple juice. Okay, and then after it came to a boil, then I turned it down and let it simmer.
All right.
And then I always use a cooking thermometer now, but I brought it to about 155 degrees, 160 degrees internal temperature. I wanted to make sure that bratwurst was cooked well enough.
Okay.
Then immediately I took it outside, put it on a grill, charred it, and grilled my buns, and put the slaw over the top. It was such a perfect balance. I would have never thought that. I'm going to put that picture on.
I'm amazed. I can't wait to see what
and
it looks like.
And to accompany that, I think Tina enjoyed this most. I grilled pineapple.
Ooh, now that sounds good.
It didn't even do anything to it. It just let the sugars do its own work, and it was a very tasty little
summery kind of thing.
Yeah, nothing over the top, but it was really, really good.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. Tony, we have Derek on the line. We're going to come to him right after our break. He's got some white insects on his petunias we're going to talk about. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Derek on the line from Montgomery. He's got some white insects on his petunias. Hi, Derek. Thanks for hanging on.
Guys, good morning. How are we doing?
Doing well. So how bad is it?
You know, we have eight planters in the backyard, and they're gorgeous. I've been hitting them with the bloom boosters and doing all that stuff, but it's infected about four out of the eight, and it appears to be stunting those growths on those four. Any suggestions?
Is it, can you look at it and see, is it aphid, or are they flying? You say they're white?
Yeah, they're really small white, and they're on the, both on the flower bud itself and on the green leaves.
Okay. Sounds like it might be a type of aphid. And usually, also white fly will can be bothersome as well with petunias. But I would use, what do you have in your arsenal at home? Do you have any type of sprays, like maybe 7 or
I do, yeah, 8? We have 7, and then I have the, besides the bloom booster and stuff from Miracle-Gro, we also have some stuff from that same company that has a little bit of the bug repellent that's built into the to the granulars as well.
Uh-huh. Have you used any of those products yet?
Yeah. That's why I was calling for you, because I'm thinking, hey, because we got them looking good, and mm-hmm. now it's only June, and they're starting to die off a bit.
Yeah. Well, a couple things with petunias, okay? And I'm going to take you through the gamut here. With petunias, you don't want to water them too much, all right? Because once they stay wet for a period of time, all of a sudden it becomes stressed. And at that point in time, then all of a sudden you start having some insect issues. So that one thing can lead to another. The other thing is, too, is that keep them healthy, keep them fertilized. They're junkies. They like to be fed throughout the growing season, which it sounds like you're already doing, which is good. And then the other thing that most of the time, most problems that I hear with petunias is the tobacco budworm. And that's a little worm that will eat the blooms and so forth, and can become quite a nuisance. And whenever you treat for tobacco budworm, just use anything with Bacillus thuringiensis in it, BT, mm-hmm. very effective for the tobacco budworm. When you're trying to control aphids and so forth, which it sounds like you might have, I would go ahead and I would use 7, I would use 8, anything of the sort will be effective for you. And you should have healthy petunias. And spray them early in the morning before the sun is on them. That way you don't risk any phytotoxicity or like burn, you know, as the sun's starting to, you know.
Sure.
You know, as it's up high in the sky and it's relatively hot and all of a sudden you spray it, then all of a sudden you might be confronted with some issues like, wow, what happened? But from that standpoint, you should be fine. And if it's really, really bad, you also can resort to removing the petunia and just go down the street to your local garden center and pick up another petunia and replace it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, guys, I really appreciate it. I'm on my way to Home Depot. We'll get some 7.
All right. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've covered a lot of ground today. We have our friends from Arling House coming in at the top of the hour because heat and humidity is moving into the tri-state, and you do not want to flip that AC on and have mm-hmm. nothing happen.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. I know that make sure that air conditioning unit's going to be in proper working condition. So when the guys from Arling House Heat and Air are with us this morning, mm-hmm. if you have any questions for those guys, or you think your unit might be on the brink, you may want to give us a call. You may want to check that. You may want to check into that before it gets too hot, because I tell you, it's not easy when you're rolling around at night and it's hot and it's humid. Nothing worse.
Yeah, and it's kind of surprising. We talked earlier about how this is still early in the planting season. It's pretty early to be up in the mid 90s already. So
it's all
do
right.
Beware.
It's okay. Maybe it's just here for a short, brief period,
mm-hmm.
and then we can go back to some of that really nice weather that we had this past week.
I love that.
Which made gardening and being outside so pleasant. You know, you're not trying to do everything at one time. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I want to bring up as well is I really want to encourage people to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and pick up high-yields turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper. I want you to put that back down into your landscape beds, because We're approaching the tail end of its effectiveness when you did it back in March or early April. We've had quite a bit of rain. And to keep yourself from having to get out the old kneeling pad and, you know, hunching over and start pulling weeds, Dimension will do wonders for you. You can also use Preen. You know, they're both effective. I like Dimension. I give it the edge. It's a little easier on a pocketbook. It lasts about a month longer, and it's definitely there at your local garden centers and nurseries for you to pick up. And it will save you some back-breaking time.
Yeah.
It's effective. It works. And it's all about timing. So I wanted to put some emphasis on it as well. And also, we were talking about watering earlier in the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pay attention to what's going on in your with your lawn. Pay attention to what's going on with your hanging baskets and all that other good stuff. And like the gentleman just called up with the issues with his petunias, I would seek advice at my local garden center and nursery, because Jen Petunis just told me the other day she went somewhere and they've put her on to two different things, and she's not been successful with either one.
Right.
That's why it's important to stay local, buy local, support your local garden centers and nurseries. That's where you're going to find the most valuable information to make you successful.
And a better product.
And a better product. And I don't mean to harp or beat on anybody, but that's just a fact of the matter. So,
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause when we come back.
And when we come back, what I want to do before we leave for the break is we're going to take caller number 7 for another pair of tickets for the home and garden tour over in northern Kentucky, over in the Seminary Square area in West Covington. A lot of neat things are there to see. Mm-hmm. Caller number 7. And when we come back, I had a few Father's Day gifts for you. If Dad likes to garden, these are some things you might want to consider for Father's Day.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Frida on the line from Norwood. She's got issues with some small trees. Hi, Frida. What kind of problems are you having?
I have trees growing in, like, fence lines.
Okay.
I have a 6-foot privacy fence on one side and chain link on the rest. And everywhere I turn, there's little trees growing up. And when I cut them down, they just come back. So I need to know if there's anything I can put on them so they won't come back.
Are the large trees, is it seedlings that are dropping that are germinating and growing?
Well, there's some. I know there's some Rosa Sharons.
Okay. That's
and sometimes I try to get them when they're small, but once they get... if I don't catch them right away, then they get bigger. Mm-hmm. So, and there's a couple of them that, because I've just been cutting a lot of them down with just, like, tree trimmers. But there's a couple of them that I'm going to have to get something else to cut because the bottom part of them got bigger than I expected.
Right. Yeah, most of the Rosa Sharons, I mean, they're notorious for that. I mean, they self-seed, volunteer, left and right. And
yeah.
Typically... You know, repeated mowings and so forth, eventually that little new seedling will give up. So typically that's what a lot of people will do. I would also... Go ahead.
The 6-foot privacy fence is right up against, like, a blacktop driveway.
Okay.
So it's, like, right between the driveway and the fence is where some of these are coming up really bad.
Got it. How wide is that area between the driveway and the fence?
Not very.
Mm. Is it grassy? Is it...
No. Is no. Just, no.
Is it mulched or is it just dirt?
No, it's neither. It's like the driveway goes almost right up to the fence.
But there's enough dirt there for seedlings to take root, right?
Well, yeah, it must just be dirt.
Okay. What I would do from that case, what you're trying to do, if you're trying to keep things from germinating or small seedlings, things that have germinated,
yeah.
I would spray underneath that fence line, and you know, where it's next to the driveway and underneath the fence, with Kilzall that has extended control. And that's a great product. I'm telling you right now. It used to go under the name, and I've not talked about this product in a long time, and shame on me. But it used to go under the name of Double Play. But Kilzall with extended control, it's going to do two things for you. You're going to have your cake and eat it too right here. You're going to be able to kill what's growing with glyphosate. Okay. And then secondly, it has prodiamine in it. That's the extended control part of it that keeps other things from germinating. So you're getting double protection with Kilzol, with extended control. And you're only going to find it at a local garden center or nursery that's a Fertilume dealer next to you. So that's where I would go with that. And then you're not going to have any issues.
Now, the ones that are bigger, is there anything I could put on those to keep them from re...
No.
You know what I mean? Because it's like, I'll cut them all... If I cut them all the way down to the ground, they'll still just come back.
Yeah, that's going to come back. That is, you know, unless you dig it out. Do you want to get rid of them, or you just want to control it?
I don't want them growing between... Because I can't even... There's no room to even dig it out.
Well,
if they're... It's like they're growing right up to the black top.
Well, then what I would do, cut them down to the ground, you know, like about 4 inches above the ground, and immediately pour on it a stump killer or use Kilzol and pour right on that wound when it's fresh. I want you to treat it like you're trying to get rid of honeysuckle.
Well, I got one of those, too.
Well, that's how you're going to do it, same way.
Okay.
And you'll be effective with it. And I would look for Kilzol with extended control or anything that's got glyphosate in it in combination with triclopyr. And you go to your, that's why you need to go to your local garden center nursery and pick up the right product. And that will work for you. Kilzol with extended control, and that's going to keep those seedlings from germinating, especially from those rows of Sharons, because they're notorious for it. And that stuff that's real woody and thick, make a fresh cut on it. As soon as you cut it, when it's bleeding and it's fresh, put it right on that wound.
Okay.
All right. Follow up with this.
All righty.
Thank you.
Thank you. Read it. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have been covering an awful lot of ground.
We've been back and forth, up and down, side to side.
Our guests have arrived. We're going to get them into the building and get them settled in. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
we're going to talk with Holly Young, one of the coordinators over there at the Covington Garden Tour for today and tomorrow. So we'll get a little scoop on what's going on over there. And then we'll hook up with our friends from Arlinghouse Heating and Air. And it's going to get hot, guys. You might need to talk to these fellas for sure. If that old air conditioning unit that you have is on the brink, it's puffing and smoking and not making things pleasant for you, you might want to pay attention.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got a great event going on, and Tony's got some more information, and we're about to talk to Holly, I think. Is that right?
Yes, Holly Young we have with us this morning, and we're going to talk about the Covington Garden Tour that's featuring the gardens and parks of Old Seminary Square in West Covington. And good morning, Holly. How are you?
I'm doing great. This is going to be a beautiful morning and a beautiful weekend, and it's going to be perfect for having a garden tour.
Yeah, it is. Plenty of suntan lotion and water and beautiful gardens. What more can you ask for?
Comfortable shoes. Really comfortable shoes. That's really, really important today.
Well, wait a minute. What about, can't you still walk barefoot in Kentucky?
Well, you know, as Ernie's much like, as I believe that you can, it's not one of the recommendations that we would make.
I got it.
But yeah, we've got like 20 locations on the tour this year, including our new mayor is joining our tour. Our Kentucky State Representative is going to be on the tour. We have Old Seminary Square's crown jewel, which is the 1820 Sanford House. It's one of the oldest and most stately buildings in Kenton County. It's absolutely beautiful.
Awesome.
We've got the Orchard Park Urban Farm. I know that a lot of people don't realize, but we raise chickens here. We've got over 2 dozen chickens, and we're keeping our neighbors up to their eyeballs in eggs.
Awesome.
And it's just amazing how well all of these communities and gardeners and farmers all function together. So this is like the one time of the year we get to truly show off all of the hard work we put in, you know, the rest of the year. And it's going to be so beautiful. Some of these gardens, I mean, we've got master gardeners, we've got novice gardeners, but some of the things you see in this area, we're known for being makers, creators, artists.
Right.
So you see creative sculptures, you see interesting landscape designs, and just some really interesting, flora and fauna that we have around here.
Right.
So, Holly, what time does it start and where does it start?
It starts at 10 a.m. today. It goes until 4 p.m. today.
All right.
It's also tomorrow. So when you buy your ticket, and that's going to be at the corner of Russell and Robin Street in Covington, Kentucky, one ticket's good for 2 days. So if you can't get to everything today, come back tomorrow and finish the tour tomorrow.
Perfect, perfect. And hang on the line, Holly, because John has some information for you for the ticket giveaway that those folks are going to pick up down there at the corner of Russell and West Rock.
We also want to make sure that everybody knows that the tickets are $15 a piece. So
perfect.
It's really affordable.
Mm. And is there a website that they can go to for more information?
We're on Facebook at just search for 2017 Covington Garden Tour. And you can also get more information at www.covingtongardentour.com.
Perfect. Well, have a great weekend, and always thanks for sharing that information with us, and do so anytime.
Happy to do so, and happy to have your listeners join us this weekend.
All right. Bye, Holly.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We do have that information, some of that information, posted on our Facebook page, as well as the farm-to-table benefit coming up next week. Down in Owington, and it's a great time to get out and about. It is going to be hot. It is going to be warm. Make sure you stay hydrated and wear some comfortable shoes, like Holly said.
Yeah, I had to throw that in there. You know, we take a bad rap over in a bluegrass state all the time. Take a bad rap, you know. Everyone says, oh, yeah, you like your cousins. You always walk around barefoot. Come on.
All right.
Why not?
Barefoot hillbilly girl.
That's right.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong with that. But, you know, I don't think today is going to be all that bad.
No.
Tomorrow I think you'll see more of the heat wave and Monday. But certainly, work outside with a little caution, Don't try and do everything all at once, a little bit at a time. Drink plenty of liquids and just enjoy yourself, Get out to your local garden centers this weekend, your nurseries. Pick up some of those items that you have yet to pick up or you need to still pick up that you've forgotten, and plenty, plenty, plenty of time to plan a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and speaking of planning ahead, we have our friend from Arling House going to be joining us here in just a moment and give you a little update on the Owl Sleep forecast. Our AccuGuess forecast is the temperatures are going to be in the mid to upper 80s today under mostly sunny skies. Much warmer tomorrow, 92 will be the high. Sunshine on Monday again, a high of 92, and maybe a little clouds on Tuesday to break things up, but still, it's going to be 92. We're going to get Ryan settled in and come back and talk with him from Arling House Heating and Air. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And our friend Ryan has joined us from Arling House Heating and Air. And as I mentioned in the forecast before we went into the break, you do not want to flip that bad boy on and not have anything happen. Morning, Ryan.
How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. So you're solo today. You don't have your crew with you.
I know. Brian's camping with the family. So that they're out for the weekend. And my good friend Nick, that joined me, I think, the last time.
Right.
He's got some family stuff going on today.
Good.
So.
All right.
Yeah.
Likewise, they should. We all should.
Absolutely. Beautiful day for it.
It is. That it is. So what, you guys staying busy? You getting a lot of calls yet? Have people been turning on the air conditioning units?
Oh, yeah.
What's going on out there?
You know, it comes in waves. It comes when the first 80-degree day hits. And so we got that, some weeks back. And now the weather is staying hot. We're kind of staying in those 80s. Air conditioner is getting a little bit more of a workout, and people are calling in with some issues. So, yeah, definitely really busy right now. Our install schedule is very full.
That's a good thing. That's where you want to be.
Absolutely.
So what's the first problem source when you said people start calling in right away? What's usually the first thing that...
I would say that... that most people are calling in because, it's not keeping up with the temperature. They maybe have it, it's on, it's running, but it just doesn't seem to keep up when we get up to 80, 85 degrees.
Okay.
And the air filter is probably the most common culprit.
Mm-hmm.
So, definitely we always recommend before we send a technician out to take a look at that and make sure that, it's been changed recently. All filters are a little bit different. as far as how often you should change them, mm-hmm. as well as the household that they're in. So, you know, if you've got a lot of pets and things like that, then you're going to want to change it a little bit more often. So checking it every 30 days would be a good thing, though.
What about when a homeowner goes outside and they look at the condensing unit and they see the line that comes into the house from the unit where it's iced up, or they're getting maybe some water inside from the A coils? Are those indicators like something's not right? Or
absolutely, yeah. If you're seeing ice outside, that ice originated inside. So you have a really, really frozen evaporator coil, which turns into a giant block of ice. So the first thing to do, you know, when you see ice around one of those lines is to shut the system down. And it's going to need several hours to thaw out before a technician can get his gauges on it, get his tools out, and diagnose the problem.
So that's a good idea for the homeowner to take a look at first, so when your guy gets there, he's not having to wait for that whole thaw-out process to take place.
Absolutely. And, you know, all the girls in the office and people answering the phones are, you know, encouraging homeowners, you know, hey, go ahead and check this before we get out there. Make sure we shut the system down. If it's not working properly, you know, most homeowners want to turn it down further to see if it'll get colder, but it won't. The best thing to do is just turn it off until we get there.
Got it. So typically, I'm just curious, when you see those issues up in the A coils, is that like a, is that an indicator like it's almost time for a new unit inside?
You know, they can always be fixed.
They can always be fixed?
They can, but, and you know, we're getting to a point here in a couple more years where some of those older systems that are having leaking A coils, where they're leaking refrigerant, which is the most common leak that happens in an air conditioning system. That A coil, if it's leaking R22 Freon, that refrigerant is being phased out. And there's a lot of incorrect information that homeowners are getting from heating and air technicians. And I don't think that anybody's trying to mislead them. I think it's simply a misunderstanding on their part. So we try and do our best to educate that. But, you know, at 2020, they will stop making the R22 Freon. And so the supply is diminishing. They're making less of it, which supply and demand, the price of it goes up. So from a financial standpoint, you know, when you've got a leaking evaporator coil, it may be time to at least consider replacing it with one that has the new style refrigerant in it, which is called Puron.
Is it just as good?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. It's different. You can't interchange the two. So the newer refrigerant, the difference between the two, the old Puron actually is a hydrochlorofluorocarbon refrigerant. So the chloro is the chlorine, and that's the ozone depleting element of the refrigerant. So the EPA is phasing that stuff out, and the new refrigerant is just an HFC refrigerant, so they got rid of the chloro. And so it's more environmentally safe.
Wonderful. Yeah. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Brian from Arling House Heating and Air with us. We do need to take a break for just a minute. Before we do, though, I want to remind you again, we've got a nice little Father's Day gift giveaway up on our B105 website. Go there and then click on In and Around the House. You get a $100 gift certificate from Jackson Florist and a $100 gift certificate from Bushelman Supply. Very easy. Log on, get registered. And before we go to break, give us some contact information for Arling House.
Yeah, it's 859-727-9000. You can always visit us on our Facebook page at Arling House Air or arlinghouseair.com.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Ryan from Arling House Heating and Air. And Tony, just asked you before we got back into the break, what do you want to touch on? We're always asking you questions. What's important for our listeners to know about their heating and air?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing that you guys always, you know, want to hear about and the listeners are always interested in is what to do when the air conditioner stops.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we talked about checking the air filter as one of those things. You know, the first thing is don't panic, right?
Right.
Because central air conditioning has only been around for most folks since the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
So don't panic. You know, check the air filter and, you know, making sure that we check the breaker for both the furnace and the air conditioner, because they should be on two separate breakers, and making sure that, that homeowners are checking batteries in the thermostat if the thermostat is blank. So those would be definitely a couple of things, quick tips, before you make a phone call, to check out that you can do yourself. You know, the other things, you know, we're getting ready to hit prime time as far as allergies, July and August, really are peaking, with allergy sufferers. And that's a lot of, you know, indoor air quality, you know, you can control with a dehumidifier or UV lights or, you know, making sure that we change the air filter regularly. So, and definitely one thing that, that we've got going on right now that we're trying to educate about as we see them since we're in people's basements and around the furnace is the dehumidifier. And a lot of people are picking up the portable dehumidifiers out there, and you definitely want to make sure that you check. There is a website to go to, or you could just Google a dehumidifier recall. So there's several brands that are out there that that have an issue, a safety issue.
Really?
And you know, you definitely want to make sure that you're getting that. That checked. Check the model and serial number.
What kind of safety issues? Are shorts or just?
Yes, it was an electrical issue. Mm-hmm. You know, they were basically, you know, fireboxes.
Sure, yeah.
Catching on fire.
That was the first thing I thought of, and then I thought, well, maybe they're not venting properly. It could be mold issues and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, they're running a lot. Humidity is pretty high in the summertime around here. And so dehumidifiers, if you have one, are running constantly. And, yeah, so there was an issue with that. There is, like I said, a website to go to. You can just check the model and serial number on the dehumidifier. I want to say that the, most of them will reimburse when you send the cord back to them between $100 and $300, depending on the manufacturer. So...
Take us through the process. So I take it that you guys will install a built-in dehumidifier into a unit when you install a unit? Is that how you typically do it?
So your air conditioner, by nature, is a dehumidifier, but they do need some help. So, you know, your air conditioner removes moisture out of the air in the cooling process, but having a dehumidifier in the basement is a really, really good thing, especially for allergy sufferers. There's these things that live in your house called dust mites, and I remember we talked about Ernie's pillow last time.
Yeah, it was full of dust mites, wasn't it? When you had it checked?
Yeah.
And it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, your pillow, after 2 years, a third of the weight of your pillow is dust mite and dust mite poop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, pretty gross. Get rid of that pillow.
Yeah. It's been gone shortly after we discussed that.
Yeah. He went on to mypillow.com and bought it.
Having a dehumidifier in your house in the basement will help get rid of those things, because dust mites can't live in conditions that are less than 50% relative humidity in the home. So having a dehumidifier in the basement, one that we can install to help the air conditioner and help the house, can be ducted or freestanding. And the one that we install is very energy efficient, something that we're very conscious of. And and it's American made. It's an April Air brand. And it's got a 5-year warranty, which is a lot better than anything you can buy on your own.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So when you have a dehumidifier, does it work? I know it works opposite of what a humidifier will do. Mm-hmm. But like during the winter months, a humidifier will also appear to make the house or make it feel warmer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does the dehumidifier do anything making it feel cooler or more comfortable? How does that work?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, just like when you walk outside, I mean, some of you maybe spent some time outdoors yesterday, and that cooler weather that we had really helped the humidity drop. And even though it was 80 degrees yesterday, I mean, it was very comfortable being outside.
Right.
So when you lower the humidity in the home, you know, you feel more comfortable at higher temperatures. So you can actually set your thermostat a few degrees higher and save some money when the humidity is lower.
That makes perfect sense, you know, and you're absolutely right, because you could be outside, you could get some things done, and then you look at the temperature and go, I should be sweating bullets right now.
Right.
And you're not. Right. And you're pretty comfortable. You get a lot done.
Yeah. It definitely, you know, dehumidifiers help you out in a couple different ways. I have one in my house, and it just runs all the time. I've got it set to about 42% right now.
So like the unit that you guys installed for my wife and I a couple years ago, mm-hmm. am I able to add a unit to that relatively easy? Or?
Yeah, you know, it just depends on how much room is in and around the utility room there where the furnace is at. But 98% of the time, no problem at all. It can be retrofitted.
And what would someone expect to pay to do something of the sort?
Yeah, so, you know, it depends. If you're, you know, if you've got electric already there for the dehumidifier, mm-hmm. Where, you know, we don't have to run electric, or, you know, if you want it ducted into the system or unducted. So, you know, they're definitely more expensive than the Home Depot type dehumidifiers, but you know, somewhere in the $2,000 to $3,000 range for a whole house dehumidifier for that kind of control would be, you know, pretty common. Maybe a little bit less than that. But generally speaking, so someone's not taken back when someone brings it up the first time.
Sure. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We have Ryan, our friend from Arlinghouse Heating and Air. When we come back, we're going to continue to get you ready for the heat that is on the way. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Ryan from Arlinghouse Heating and Air in with us. And again, want to remind you, a great way to stay connected with us is jumping onto our Facebook page. And you've been forewarned. It's going to be kind of beautiful today, but then tomorrow it hits 90s for at least 3 days, maybe 4 days, with loads of sunshine. So if you haven't turned on your air conditioner yet, you may be surprised when you flip that switch that nothing happens, and we don't want that to happen
flip
to you.
Flip the switch. And, yeah. you know what it does, what happens around here. This good old dog days of summer, and we'll have our fair share of hot days.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sure heat alerts and all that other good stuff. We're not always that lucky to have nice, cool weather like what we had last week, but sure, man, when it gets hot, with the upcoming Owlsleep forecast, what Ernie threw our way, this is a great topic to be on top of, you know, mm-hmm. just getting things in order. Something that you guys did for us when you installed our unit for us at home, I like the fact, I would have to say there's a lot of problems here with various homes, but you put dampers in all the lines, and you also, I'm trying to, what was the gentleman's name that moved down to Louisville?
RC.
Yeah.
He went up to every room. And my wife's like, what's he doing? He's been here a long time. What's he doing? But he was trying to adjust the flow in all the rooms, and it made a huge difference.
Yeah.
And he had that temperature down, and he adjusted the vents, and I think he even put some – do you guys put, like, plugs in some vents as well that kind of restrict the flow a little bit where it's not as strong versus yep. others?
Yeah, it's not necessarily a plug, but it kind of chokes the airflow down if
right.
there's no damper. That's installed, you know, in the ductwork. Because a lot of times we're making some ductwork modifications when we're installing
right.
new,
right?
But we're not completely redoing ductwork. So if it has dampers, we can adjust those. If those are covered up or we can't get to them or there are none, then yeah, we can choke the airflow down, and that's called an air balance. Is
right.
what you're talking
okay.
about.
Thank you. That's yeah. okay. I remembered him saying that.
Yeah. So we have a couple different devices. I've got one device that was you know, $30 from the local distributor, and I've got one that was you know, $2,200 in order to be able to do that air balance. And we've got a few guys, we've got actually four of us that are certified in air balancing. So a lot of people have comfort issues between the first floor and the second floor. And a lot of times those are taken care of when you install a new furnace that's got one of those new variable speed blower motors in it. They're very efficient. You can leave them run all the time. And a lot of times we'll be fixing some return problems that houses have. But if all else fails, then we can come in and we can do that air balancing. And it does take some time to do that. I mean, sometimes I've been, you know, 2-3 hours or better. Doing an air balance.
Really? That's so funny because Tina would, she'd go, what's he doing?
where did he go?
He's up here an awful long time. What's he doing? I'm like, don't worry about it. No, it was all good, though. It was funny. But you just hit the nail on the head. Returns. Mm. How important are returns, and how do they handle that stuff today?
So airflow is key. Airflow is key to efficiency with air conditioners and furnaces. So a lot of times there's not enough return in the house, and or maybe there's a floor that doesn't have return at all, depending on the age of the home.
Mm-hmm.
They call them cold air returns for a reason. So when it was just heating and there was no air conditioning, those cold air returns were on the floor because that's where the cold air was. Now in newer houses, those air returns are up high. And a lot of times the builder doesn't add enough of them. So we come in and we make that duct analysis. Anytime we're coming in and thinking about replacement, or when we're there for service, we're paying attention to those things. And we want to address those problems. So when we install your new air conditioner, if it gets, let's say, 16 miles to the gallon in electricity, it's SEER rating, then we want to make sure that you're getting that out of it. And, mm-hmm. and airflow is key for that.
Got it. You said SEER rating. Does that mean is it the higher the SEER, the better?
Yes. So
is that always the case?
So basically they range anywhere from, 14 SEER, which is seasonal energy efficiency rating.
Mm-hmm.
And they've even got some that are up in the 20 SEER range. And yes, so that they're more efficient, the higher that it gets.
Does that mean it keeps your home cooler the higher the SEER rating, or is it sometimes overinflated to where someone's trying to sell you something that maybe it's overkill and it's not necessary, mm-hmm. but it will cost you more?
So, that's a great point. I was speaking with a gentleman just a few weeks ago about our 20 SEER.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a train and a Rude 20 SEER. And it's not an energy efficiency race at that point. It's really a comfort air conditioner. This air conditioner tries to run all the time, and it's called a modulating unit. So, it could be running at a very, very low speed, kind of mm-hmm. like a plane. You get a plane, it gets up to altitude, and we call that cruising speed. That air conditioner will try to do that. And so it's at that point, when it's running longer, it's pulling out more moisture out of the air, just like, we're talking about dehumidifiers.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get a better comfort out of that air conditioner.
Interesting. That was always confusing for me. And you would talk to your friend down the street, oh, yeah, you need this SEER. No, you need that SEER. And then you would talk to somebody that's in the business, now that's not necessarily true. Mm-hmm. And you just get all this conflicting information, kind of like in the gardening world sometimes, or throw lime on it, okay?
You get a lot of bad advice from people that aren't professionals.
That's why you want to stay local and leave it to the professionals. We say it all the time.
Could not agree more. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Ryan from Arling House Heating and Air with us. We need to pause for a moment, but I do want to remind you, going to give you a chance to win a $100 gift certificate from Jackson Forest and $100 from Bushelman Supply. Very easy to do. A great Father's Day gift giveaway. Go to B105.com and click on the In and Around the House giveaway page and get registered. Need to pause right now. We'll be back with Ryan from Arling House Heating and Air. Welcome back. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Ryan from Arling House Heating and Air. And the last time he was here, I think it was the last time or recently when you were here, you had an air quality indicator or what did you call it? An air assist?
It's an air advice.
Air advice.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some things that you may be doing in your home that could be leading to some health issues or just some uncomfortableness, and Ryan's got a few things to kind of measure by. We make these mistakes quite often, don't we?
A lot of homeowners do, absolutely. Yeah. We don't know that we're doing it to ourselves. But so we have a machine. It's called Air Advice, and we've got them equipped with some of our sales team and service technicians. And within 30 minutes of plugging that into your home, it generates a report to the technician. and it's going to measure a couple different things. It's going to measure chemicals that are in the air. They call those VOCs, volatile organic chemicals, particulates, which is like dust and things like that, carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide, and then temperature and humidity as well. So we're testing for these things in your house, and, you know, something that we find common would be carbon dioxide, which would be high levels of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being is because there's not enough air exchange in the house. So you remember the old saying, I'm going to go outside for a breath of fresh air?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So yeah. So back in the 70s, something happened, the oil crisis, right? And then all of a sudden everybody got energy conscious and they started making tighter homes. And then we started trapping air. You know, stale air in the house.
Yeah, that was the norm. You know, gotta button up the house.
Yeah.
You know, get ready.
OPEC had us in a stranglehold back then. It wasn't good.
So we're doing it to ourselves to try and save money, but we've got some long-term health issues that are resulting because of that. And certain things that people are using to scent their house with, those plug-ins and certain candles, off-gas chemicals into the house, and over, you know, too much of a good thing, of anything, is a bad thing.
Right. Now, you made a great point when we were in the break talking about this, that, you know, the people that provide those products will test and use as a guide one of those, for instance, one of those scented plugins. And so you as a homeowner go, that works pretty good. I think I'm going to get one for every room.
Right.
So you go from having one where it says, you know, safe to use.
Right.
Then you add 50 of them in your house and they're in every plug. Now you've created an issue.
You absolutely can. Something that you're not even conscious about.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that's given off by those plugins?
There's a ton of different chemicals, but I would say the most common would be formaldehyde.
Wow. So that's interesting. That's not police, but other things are.
That, yeah.
And you're in a home that's they're tighter than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly that and sometimes when you go into those homes, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
It really is. So I can just see exactly what you're saying. If there's not that air movement and getting things out and in, that it lingers and it creates some health issues.
So if the cat hasn't moved in a while, you may be in the taxidermy business and not know it.
He's okay. He's just a little stiff. He's got to get up this morning. He's down in the back. He's okay.
You know, I think people are trying to prevent something, right? So maybe it's they just want their house to smell fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a bad thing. I want the same thing for my house. So there's a couple different things that you can do besides just masking the problem with plugins and candles and things of that nature. There's actually UV lights and ozone generating products that we can install in your home, and the ozone will neutralize odors. And so it's actually in the duct system, and all the air in the house passes through the duct system many times an hour. So you know, having that and a clean filter in your system and having your system maintained regularly will eradicate those things.
Who would that best be served for? I mean, like, for example, people who maybe have more than one or two pets, because obviously there's times you can go into someone's home, it's like, whoa, I know they have pets.
Right.
I mean, do you find, are they the type of customers that are looking for those type of air cleaners or purifiers, or using that, what'd you call that, an ozone?
The ozone generating UV lights. Yeah.
Yeah. Would that get rid of some of those pet odors?
Absolutely. Yeah. But you know, also people who are allergy sufferers or asthma.
Mm-hmm.
Asthma has been on the rise since the 80s. And again, you know, we're doing it to ourselves. The EPA says that the air inside your home is 2 to 5 times, you know, more polluted than the air outside of your home. And so we're doing it to ourselves by trying to save money with making houses tighter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so people who are asthma sufferers would be, you know, a great thing.
You know, something else you honed in on when we were in one of the breaks, at what point or what level when you're doing that home assessment, you're checking the air quality, mm-hmm. can you determine the best fitted environment where mold loves to linger in?
Yeah.
Do you find that often?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, people commonly ask if we can test for mold in their house, and we can't directly test for the mold. There mm-hmm. are kits for that that you can right. purchase and send away to a lab. But our machine, the Air Advice, will test conditions where mold is commonly grown, or it can grow. So, you know, higher humidity levels, not having a dehumidifier, or maybe there's a sink or faucet that's leaking somewhere in the house that you can't see, or the roof is.
Mm-hmm.
So that will cause elevated humidity levels in your house. And controlling that with either your air conditioning system or something to help it out, like the dehumidifier, will eradicate that. But we can test for the conditions, absolutely.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Ryan from Arlinghouse Heating and Air with us. So when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion about how to improve the condition of your house and how to be ready for the heat that is on the way. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Ryan from Arlinghouse Heating and Air in with us. We've been talking about a lot of things that you should be concerned about, at least aware of, with your heating and air and the conditioning of your housing. And one of the things that we get asked quite a bit is, what about thermostats? And you just said something when we were talking that it's a unit that controls 45% of your energy bill. Is that correct?
Yeah, 40% of your total heating and cooling bill, or I'm sorry, your electric bill, gas and electric bill, is coming from the air conditioner and the furnace. So it's a major appliance in the house, and it's a gas guzzler. So
yes, it
well,
is.
Good thing gasoline prices are going down.
Yeah, one of the great things about the thermostat is having a programmable thermostat. And, if you utilize the programming in a thermostat, you can save somewhere between 5% and 10% on your total, energy consumption. So, having the setback when you guys aren't home, if you're going to be gone at work for 8 hours, having a setback of 3 or 4 degrees, can help save some money.
So keeping that variance at a lower setting or a lower number, so to speak, 3 to 4 degrees versus 10 to 15.
Right.
Because it would cost you more to ramp it back up or cool it back down.
Absolutely.
So keeping it smaller, I guess, over the course of a year, X number of days, I could see that savings.
Absolutely. If you normally keep the thermostat at 70, then while you're at work, bump it up to 74. You can do that manually, but most thermostats can be programmed to do it for you, so that you don't even have to give a second thought about it.
Something else that I think a lot of homeowners don't take into consideration is where to really position a thermostat for it to be most effective. How does that come into play?
As far as the location of the thermostat
mm-hmm.
in the home?
Yes.
I mean, definitely an interior wall is where it should be located. And if you've got direct sunlight, coming in and shining on the thermostat, that can throw the thermostat off because we're getting that radiant heat from the sunlight. So you may notice that your air conditioner is running a long time, the rest of the house is cold, but the thermostat showing a higher temperature, and it could be because of that sunlight.
Any reasons or anything that would perhaps cause a thermostat to kind of just go wacky? I mean, or how would you really know?
Yeah, I would say that the most common thermostat failure, they have circuit boards in them, mm-hmm. and circuit boards can go bad. There are little micro surges that happen every day in your house. Appliances will kick on and off. And so maybe a power surge coming from an electrical storm, something like that, could knock out a thermostat. We do make surge protectors, or we do install surge protectors on both your indoor and outdoor unit. We offer that as an add-on. It's an accessory. Everybody always asks, well, why didn't it come with one? But
why didn't mine come with one,
right?
By the way?
Well, the manufacturers don't factory install them. The same thing with your TVs and computers. It'd be nice if the manufacturer just put one on there. But you always got to buy that separately. Because it doesn't help the unit run. It's a good thing to have, and it's becoming more and more popular because of all the circuit boards that we're using in air conditioners and furnaces. So it's a great idea to have a surge protector installed by your heating and air professional on the equipment.
Oh, great idea. Something too that's often asked of me in the nursery, and I'm sure other nurseries throughout, is hey, what can I put around my condenser unit outside? I want to hide it. It's near our patio. We have guests, and it kind of sounds a little noisy. What's your spin on it?
Well, if you recommend your customers to put a holly bush around the air conditioner, you might get kicked in the shin by your heating and air professional. No, you know, everyone likes to hide it because they don't want to look at it. But you do need about, I would say, you know, two feet of clearance around the unit, mm-hmm. Around the sides of it so that it can breathe. Because that's the only way that we're going to be able to get rid of the heat that the refrigerant has collected from inside. So your air conditioner is not adding cooling to your house. It's removing heat. And the outdoor unit, if you put your hand on top of it, you're going to feel warm air blowing out the top. That's the warm air from the inside of the house. So we want to make sure that it's breathing properly around the unit, not getting things too close. And most manufacturers are going to recommend about 4 or 5 feet above the air conditioner in clearance as well.
Got it. What will you typically do if you visit a homeowner and they have like maybe a tune-up for their air conditioning unit? What are you doing to that condenser? What are some things you're looking for when you're inspecting it?
So, you know, we want to make sure that all the electrical connections on all the motors, the power supply coming to the unit is nice and tight, that there's no faulty electrical wires that are in there. We're gonna test the electrical components that are in the unit itself, you know, the motors, the capacitors, the contactors, all of those things that are inside the air conditioner. And then we're going to take the top off of the air conditioner. If we can get the sides off of it, some manufacturers make an air conditioner that's easier to get completely apart than others. But, you know, I always recommend all of our technicians in our training classes to put as many pieces of that air conditioner in the yard as possible so you can strip it down and get it back to factory fresh. We want to make sure that thing is as clean as the day that we installed it. So we're taking it all apart. We're hosing it out, both the bottom and the coil itself to mm-hmm. make sure that's nice and clean.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Ryan from Arling House Heating and Air in with us. And Mom says hello. Care Bear just chimed in on our Facebook page and said, "That's my boy."
Hey, Mom.
Yeah. So her dad just celebrated an anniversary here recently, right?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
Saw all the pictures and wish them all the best luck. Some great people there. But I just had to share that with you. I thought it was pretty funny. I was checking to see if we had any Facebook questions, and that was Mom. Very proud of you. As she should be. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to recap with Ryan, our friend from Arling House Heating and Air. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Ryan in from Arling House Heating and Air. And again, first, let me tell you, thanks for coming in again. I know it, you got to get up early, but you probably do that anyway. But it's nice for you to come over and share some time with us.
I appreciate you having
Most
me.
Most definitely. Always a wealth of information. You guys do a great job. I know you guys have installed a couple of units for us.
Yeah.
Not in our main home, but at work and our house. And we've been so pleased with that. And I can't say it enough. It's perfect.
We appreciate the opportunity.
Very comfortable, Ernie. I'm comfortable.
Got to be comfortable. So let's wrap up a couple of things. We mentioned right when you came on about how filters are one of the primary problems.
Absolutely. So making sure that you've got a clean air filter, changing it or at least checking it every 30 days would be recommended, unless you have a filter like Tony. That's a 4 or 5 inch wide filter. Those are the bigger filters, and you should be checking those at the beginning of every season, so about every 6 months.
And my light just came on. I said, "Hey, it's time for a filter change." So, yeah. And you know, something else that you guys have put a lot of emphasis on is you don't really want the most expensive filter.
No, you know, there's Goldilocks and the Three Bears. There's one that's just right. the ones that you can see through, they would call those hog hair filters. It would be your 30-day air filter is what they're rated for. We commonly call those amongst technicians, rock catchers, because that's all they're good for. They just catch rocks. they're not going to catch some of those finer particles of dust.
Mm-hmm.
And then so on the upper end of things, with a 1-inch filter, you don't want to go crazy on that one. A lot of homeowners are spending $20 and $30 a filter, and it's a really heavy pleated filter, and there's only so much air filtration that you can get out of a 1-inch filter.
Mm-hmm.
So making sure that you're not going too high on that rating and finding one that's more appropriate. I always recommend the cheapest 90-day filter that you can find, which would be a white pleated filter. And usually you're going to pay about $2 or $3 a filter for those.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they say they're good for 90 days, the key word is up to 90 days. And, you know, you definitely want to make sure that you're changing or checking that every 30 days on the 1-inch filter.
I remember one of my, the old unit that we had mm-hmm. had a 1-inch filter.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, it was like the fiberglass filter. You could pull it out, hose it out, put it back in.
Right.
And then I purchased one of those real thick ones. You know, it's like, oh, it keeps all the pollutants out, all the dust out of the house, allergens and all that other good stuff. And all of a sudden, I would hear this whistle. It was almost like my motor wasn't able to pull or get the air through there. Is that what was happening?
Yeah, I mean, the blower motor inside your furnace or your air handler, whatever you're using to move air in the house, it's an air pump. Right. So it doesn't generate the air. It just moves the air from through the return and then out the supply. So when the air filter gets clogged up, you know, the motor can really strain and it puts an adverse effect on that motor and it starves it for air. And then the house won't cool or heat as well. So you definitely want to make sure that it's not too restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be careful on the 1-inch filters, and the 1-inch wide filters are the most common filters that people have.
Right.
But most people now, especially our customers, are getting the 4- and 5-inch wide filters. And it's a heavier pleated filter, but it's wider. So it doesn't restrict the airflow quite as bad or at all. They'll last longer as well. They last about 6 months.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Ryan, before we get out of here, give us your contact information one more time for Arling House Heating and Air.
It's 859-727-9000. You can get us on our Facebook page. We're also on Instagram, and the website is arlinghouseair.com.
I took a picture of you while you're here working and sent it to Mom. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.